How's everybody doing this morning? All right, outstanding. Well, thank you for joining me in this session. I know that there are other options. There are other things that you could be doing, but you've made the decision to come and join us in this session. So I will kindly reciprocate, make this a very content-rich, very educational session around self-directed IRAs to, as was mentioned, to create tax-deferred and tax-free profits. Now, there are three main strategies that I'm going to talk about in this session, and that is rentals in a self-directed IRA, joint ventures, and master leasing. Now, I've been in this business for 13 years. I'm a landlord. My wife and I also make loans to other real estate investors for fix and flip transactions in and outside of our self-directed retirement plans. And I think it's important to understand at the very beginning of this program that this is not a discussion of you have to do every deal inside of your self-directed IRA. Which, by show of hands, who has a self-directed IRA already? Okay, awesome. Now, I'm sure some of these individuals that have raised their hands, some are doing every deal inside of their self-directed IRA. Some are doing more outside of their self-directed IRA than they are inside of their self-directed IRA. And I'm sure some people, it might be around 50-50. It also can depend on your age. So I find that folks that are a little bit younger, they want to do more deals outside of their IRA than inside of their IRA. Why do you think that is? They need to make money now, right? And that's okay. What we don't want to see happen, especially for those that are a little bit younger, is they wait until they're 50 years old to start utilizing a self-directed IRA. Because what you're going to learn in this program is that you can leverage what's called compounding interest in the absence of taxation. I would ask you to write that down, but it'll take a while. Compounding interest, no taxes. That's what we're going to talk about. So self-directed IRAs, by the nature of the provisions of the tax code, afford you the ability to create compounding interest in the absence of taxation, which can ultimately get you to your retirement goals and your financial goals in a much shorter period of time. So for my wife and I, it's about 50-50 right now. And it's a rising tide, we call it. So we do deals outside of our IRA. We do deals inside of our IRAs. We do private lending inside of our IRAs and outside of our IRAs. We also own rental property inside of our IRAs and outside of our IRAs. And so I think it's very important at the beginning of this program that everybody understands that. Everybody's in a little different situation. And we like to take here at Equity Trust Company a customized approach to everybody's individual specific needs. For some people, their needs might be, I want to do every single deal in my Roth IRA. Now, for someone that's a little bit older, why do you think they would want to do every single deal inside of their self-directed Roth IRA? Ed, I know you know the answer. No, so Ed says, no taxes when they take the money out. So you're going to learn more about that numerically with a Roth IRA, how you can take distributions, you can create growth, and preserve all of your wealth with 0% tax on your distributions. And so this compounding interest in the absence of taxation, to frame this entire program up for you, can help you get to your retirement goals and your financial goals in a shorter period of time. Let me give you an example. So a good friend of mine, an investor, an equity trust client, his name is Scott, his wife's name is Christine, he's from Rochester, New York. In 2010, Scott and Christine came to one of our one-day workshops. We used to do these one-day workshops all across the country. Who's been to one of our one-day workshops? I know quite a few of you. Great. So they came to one of our one-day workshops in 2010, knew nothing about self-directed IRAs, but knew a little bit about real estate. They were just getting involved in real estate. And Scott and Christine were very focused on growing their real estate business, but they recognized very quickly that they needed to make sure that they paid attention to their retirement plans. Because they had 401ks from their jobs that they had left, and they had Roth IRAs. And so they transitioned those retirement plans over into self-directed IRAs with Equity Trust. No taxes or penalties. For those of you that are brand new, you'll learn about that, how to move money from point A to point B without paying any taxes. And once they were in a self-directed retirement account environment, they began buying rentals, They began doing occasional fix and flip transactions. They've done buy and sell on owner financing, carrying the paper. They've also done quite a bit of private lending with their self-directed IRAs and Roth IRAs. And we'll talk about the difference between a traditional IRA versus a Roth IRA. They try to do as much as they can in their Roth IRAs. And in 2010, when I sat down and met with them, they told me that their goal, their long-term retirement goal, is by 2025 to sell their primary residence in Rochester, New York, run their real estate business from wherever they want to go, sell off most of their personal belongings, get in their RV, and travel the country. That was their goal. Scott called me just before the pandemic hit. He said, John, our house is up for sale. We're going to auction off most of our belongings. We got the RV ready to go. We're pursuing our long-term retirement goals. And I said, well, wait a second, Scott. You told me that this was going to happen in 2025. Now, I know many of you have never met Scott before, but he is hyper-analytical. He has a spreadsheet for everything. He produces spreadsheets for the grocery list. All right? That's the way he is. So he's very intelligent from a numerical perspective. The one variable that he left out in his financial equation was that as he was doing deals with his Roth IRAs, he didn't have to pay taxes, which means he had more investing power after every single deal to plow into, as he says, more investments. And so ultimately, what that equated to for him is being able to get to his retirement goal, him and his wife's retirement goal, in 2020 instead of 2025. So he shaved off about 5 years and got there instead of 15 years, got there in 10 years. So when we talk about getting to our retirement goals in a shorter period of time, I want you to think about this compounding interest in the absence of taxation concept. And that's the real horsepower behind everything that I talk about and everything that I teach. So, rentals in a self-directed IRA. What does this mean? What can it mean for you? How to do it? And most importantly, how to do it without any leverage whatsoever. I'm going to talk about the three methods to finance real estate transactions with a self-directed IRA. One of those methods is borrowing money. And it's the last method that we talk about for a very specific reason. Why? Because you never have to borrow money doing self-directed IRA deals if you structure things the right way. And that's what we're going to talk about. If you do want to borrow money, we'll touch a little bit on how that can be done. Now, let me give you an example of rental properties in a self-directed IRA and what this could potentially mean for you. So two investors that I started working with in 2010, Kevin and Cynthia, they came to Equity Trust in 2010 after the Great Recession. What do you think their 401ks looked like in 2007 into 2008? About 50% of the value that they originally were. Now, fortunately, by 2009, they had recouped or recovered about to 80% of their original principal that they had prior to the Great Recession. Good news for them. What do you think they did with those 401ks? Rolled them over to self-directed IRAs. They rolled them over to self-directed traditional IRAs, and then they subsequently converted those funds to Roth IRAs. Now, I'll share with you what that means, converting funds from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. And for those of you that want to look at doing that, what that means and how you can do it appropriately. So they got their money into Roth IRAs, and both Kevin and Cynthia, with their respective Roth IRAs, husband and wife, went out and started buying rental property, fixing those houses up, and then renting them out long term. They have also done deals where they've bought houses and sold on owner financing, carrying the paper. They've also bought houses and sold on lease option to purchase. They're buy and hold investors. They're looking for long-term income-producing assets in their Roth IRAs. So in year one, they each started with a property. The cash flow that was flowing back into the Roth IRAs was tax-free. What you'll learn in this business, there is no Schedule E as long as you're doing things properly. There's no reporting of any of your rental income attributed to your Roth IRA or IRA in general on your own tax return. Think of it just like investing in the stock market with an IRA. you buy a dividend-paying stock or mutual fund or ETF, and that dividend income, you don't have to report that income because it's in your tax-exempt IRA, right? Same concept with buying and selling real estate or even making private loans to other investors. All of the income comes back into the IRA. It's exempt from taxes. Some accounts, it grows tax-deferred. Other accounts, it grows tax-free, such as a Roth IRA. So for Kevin and Cynthia, they're in a Roth IRA environment, so all of their income is tax-free. What do you think they do with that income? They reinvest. They put it into more buy-and-hold deals. So they bought a third and a fourth and a fifth. They've also sold some of those properties to receive the larger capital infusion into the IRA so that they could go out and buy more real estate. So fast forward 10, 11 years later, they now have 14 cash flowing properties. They bought and sold over 20 houses. They have over $1 million in properties in cash flow coming in on an annual basis. Their cash flow, their net operating cash flow on an annual basis is $139,000. Now, they started in 2010 with $100,000, and they have since grown that now to over $1 million in net worth with $139,000 tax-free coming in every single year. Kevin and Cynthia are over the retirement age of 59 and a half. The qualified retirement age in the United States is 59 and a half. That's a figure to write down. So because they're beyond that magical age of 59 and a half, conceivably, they can take a distribution every single year in the amount of $139,000, because that's their cash flow, right? And they pay 0% tax. Never hits their 1040 as ordinary income. It's all tax-free. You guys like this? Right? So you're starting to hear about a Roth IRA. We'll dive a little bit deeper into, well, what does it mean for me if I have a traditional IRA? You're still doing okay with a traditional IRA. But the Roth IRA has an incredible amount of horsepower behind it. Now, with this Roth IRA and these properties, I asked Kevin and Cynthia, because they're over 59 and a half, what are they doing with the $139,000 in cash flow? And what they passionately told me was that they don't plan on using that $139,000 themselves. They don't plan on, in fact, taking any distributions from the Roth IRA. What do you think they're going to do with that Roth IRA money? Kids. Kids and grandchildren. So their plan is to leave the Roth IRAs, which are tax-free, to their children. And if their children have children, they'll leave it to their grandchildren. They'll skip a generation. An inherited Roth IRA is one of the most powerful vehicles that I know of afforded to us by the provisions of the tax code. William Roth, 1997-1998. He was a legislative sponsor of the Roth IRA. He shares the same birthday with my father. That's why I know I was put here to talk about the Roth IRA and how powerful it is. That's probably the only joke you'll get. It's a bad one. I don't tell a lot of jokes. So if I do tell one that's dry, just laugh at me, okay? So the Roth IRA, inherited Roth IRA, is incredibly powerful. Now, here's something to take special note of. January 1 of 2020, there was an act that was passed. It's called the Secure Act. The Secure Act. A lot of people didn't even know about it. Has anyone heard of the Secure Act, by the way, just if I show of hands? Okay, quite a few of you. That's good. Most audience I speak to, there's like three or four hands that show up. And unfortunately, this is like the biggest legislation that's happened with retirement plans since like 1986. And no one knew about it. Here's the one thing that changed. There were a few changes, but here's the one thing that changed that was very important to you. Inherited IRAs have to be distributed in 10 years. There are a couple exceptions to that. For example, if you have a minor child. But needless to say, 10 years. That's okay, though, for Kevin and Cynthia. Because when they pass away and leave that Roth IRA to their grandchildren, the grandchildren will be able to continue to use it for 10 years, tax-free. The growth is tax-free. When they distribute the money from the Roth IRA, tax-free. When we get into converting funds from a traditional to a Roth, there's some major motivation for a lot of Americans right now to convert money from a traditional to a Roth, because they don't want to leave the tax burden to their children or grandchildren. This leads me to, there are three reasons why I am this passionate about self-directed IRAs, something that I learned when I first started with Equity Trust back 13 years ago. Number one reason why, you can write these down, that I love self-directed retirement account investing. As an investor myself, as well as someone that represents Equity Trust and teaches investors all across the country, number one is, of course, the IRA is tax-exempt, tax-deferred or tax-free. That's an easy one. We've been talking about it. Most people here know that. Number two, no tax returns. No additional administrative burden. As long as you're doing things the right way and properly. Now, if you go out and start doing debt finance real estate transactions, if you invest in a real estate private equity syndication with your IRA that's got leverage, you're going to have to deal with a little-known tax return called 990Ts. And there are a few other things that can come up if you do a prohibited transaction, for example. But good news is, everything that I talk about avoids these implications. All right, so owning rentals free and clear, partnering your IRA with another IRA investor, your IRA making a private loan, you don't have to worry about the administrative burden or extra tax returns. When you own a rental property in your IRA, there is no Schedule E. There is no reporting to your 1040. It's all tax-exempt money. It's sort of like owning stocks and mutual funds in your IRA, but instead it's a tangible asset in your retirement plan. So that's number two. Number three, this is an important one because a lot of people don't know about this. IRAs avoid probate. IRAs avoid probate. So many people underappreciate this. If I get waffled by a bus later today, I don't have to worry about it. I have a beneficiary listed on my IRA as my spouse. It becomes my spouse's IRA, and I don't have to worry about anything. Now, I do have some advanced training on legacy planning with IRAs. Do I want to list my trust? Do I need to set up a trust? Should I list a spouse? Should I list a child or grandchild? Should I list a charity? We have additional training that goes through this. But the important aspect of this, again, is that IRAs avoid probate. And folks, I want you to think about that because I can't tell you how many people over the last couple years, particularly in 2020, raided their IRAs and used them as a piggy bank for things that they probably didn't need to. It was under the CARES Act. Who remember the CARES Act? Right? Well, there's actually a section, Section 2202, that said, oh, you can take money out of your IRA and you don't have to pay a penalty. And a lot of people, unfortunately, did that. Those people that contacted me, I said, were you being thrown out of your house? Could you not make your mortgage payment? Were you not able to eat at night? Were you not able to feed your children? Most of them said, no, it was just the government said I could take money out without a penalty, so I thought it'd be a good idea. Terrible idea. Absolutely terrible idea. Why? IRAs avoid probate. IRAs are protected from creditors. Go into credit card debt and file bankruptcy. I'm not advising anybody to do that, by the way. And your IRAs are protected. Why would you ever dip into the IRA? We want to continue to fuel that IRA and put as much money in there as possible. Okay? So I wanted to make sure everybody understands that. I'm going to go through some joint venture case study examples so you can understand how to partner your IRA with your non-IRA funds, how to partner with a non-disqualified person, we call it, and really start to grow a small IRA in a very meaningful way. Who has a small IRA or covered education savings account or other account that they're looking to grow? Okay, quite a few of us. Joint ventures can be an effective way to do that. And then I'm going to talk about master leasing. This is a hot topic. I want to share with you how with a small amount of money in an IRA, you can rent a property and then sublease on a minimum one-month lease to an end tenant. We're going to go through the details of it. That's just the skinny version. I did want to mention that your IRA can loan money to other investors, not yourself or your business. My wife and I, we have rentals in our IRA. We have cash flow coming back in. And we don't always have the opportunity to go out and buy another rental. So what do? We use that IRA money and we deploy it to borrowers, rehabbers, that need our money for their real estate rehab projects. And then all of the interest comes back to the IRAs tax-free. Who's a private lender? Who loans, buys notes? All right, a few of us. You can do that as well with your self-directed IRA. You can partner multiple IRAs together. That's a big part of our business, something to be thinking about. So tax-sheltered retirement plans. There are three accounts that you're going to want to focus on: the traditional IRA, Roth IRA, and solo 401k. There are a few other ancillary tax-advantaged investment accounts that you can take advantage of, such as the SEP IRA, the Simple IRA. There is what's called a Coverdell Education Savings Account for children or grandchildren if you want to save tax-free for their education. Highly effective tool. And then also a health savings account. A lot of people are not familiar with the fact that they could actually save in a tax-advantaged environment for their health care expenses through a health savings account. So if you have a health savings account now, you can simply transfer that over into a self-directed HSA and start incorporating that HSA into your real estate investment opportunities. Now, what is a self-directed IRA? For those of you that aren't familiar, a lot of you are already, so we're going to zip through this quickly. It's no different than any other IRA, 401k, or other retirement plan that you might be familiar with. Self-directed is really just an industry term. It just indicates to you that you have the ability to invest in real estate. You have the ability to take control, invest in what you know, like, and understand. Whereas most other financial institutions are only going to allow you to invest in what? Stocks, mutual funds, right? Traditional assets. So you have a broader range of investment options with a company like Equity Trust because we specialize in the custody of alternative assets. We have the personnel. We have the training, the education, the one-on-one support. We have the tools and technology to accommodate alternative investing in real estate, not so much traditional investing. If you want to invest in traditional assets like stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, we do have those platforms as well available. So you can sort of do everything all under one roof. And we can talk about that and share more details with you. So a broader range of investment options. It's not a matter of legality for financial institutions. It's a matter of choice. They choose to not allow you to invest in alternative assets. How do you self-direct? It's simple. You open an account, and then you fund the account. Now, some of you may have a 401k or a 403b or a 457. Maybe you work for the federal government. You have a thrift savings plan. These are employer-sponsored plans. Providing that you qualify, which typically means you leave the company or retire or attain the age of 59 and a half, you roll over the money into an IRA. If you have one of these employer plans and you're still working there and you're under 59 and a half, in some instances you can still roll the money over into an IRA. It's called an in-service withdrawal. So for those of you that are actively employed and you're saying, hey, I don't know if I can roll money over or not, call your plan administrator and ask, can I take an in-service withdrawal? They'll tell you whether you can or can't. If you can't, you simply roll the money over into a self-directed IRA and you get started. If you have an IRA elsewhere, Fidelity, Schwab, whoever, you simply transfer that over into the Equity Trust IRA. Now let me pause for a moment and make sure I clarify. When you transfer or roll over money from one financial institution to another, there are no tax consequences or penalties. You're simply moving from one retirement plan to another. That's one of the most common questions I get is, well, John, I want to self-direct into real estate, but my broker or advisor or my CPA told me there's going to be severe tax consequences and penalties. Folks, we would not be in business. I would not be standing up here today if you had to pay taxes and penalties to move your retirement plan into a self-directed IRA environment to invest in real estate. It's simply moving from one bank account to another, so you're just sliding the money over. All right, now let me shift gears just for a moment, because now that we're a little ways into the program, it's important for me to mention and clarify that I'm here representing Equity Trust. We are a regulated financial institution. We hold our charter from the state of South Dakota. Our headquarters is in Cleveland, Ohio. We have over 400 associates, over $33 billion in assets under custody and administration. I am wearing an Equity Trust cap. Although I wear my investor cap, especially when I'm out at conferences and seminars, I can share a lot of what I've done and a lot of what I've done with a lot of individual investors one-on-one and talking through their transactions. But I am here wearing that equity trust cap, so it's important for me to mention that I'm not here to provide any tax, legal, or financial advice, but I am here to provide education and information. And that's what we do. We provide a lot of information and education through our courses, through our training, through our one-on-one support. I had an opportunity to write a book with our company founder, Dick Desich, who's widely known as the pioneer of the self-directed IRA industry. So we have a number of avenues for you to learn and grow as an equity trust client. For those of you that are already clients, there are all these resources out there that you might not know exist that we can help you tap into. And for those of you that are not equity trust clients, of course we can share with you how you can get started and how you can get access to all of this information. The one gift that the pandemic gave me was the opportunity to not spend so much time on the road speaking at conferences and instead invest hundreds of hours in a virtual classroom that we put together up in Cleveland, Ohio, where we do most of our training now. And we created a course called the Master Course. It's a multi-module course, and I call it the IRA Owner's Manual. So I had a lot of folks over the last 13 years that said, John, I got a self-directed IRA, and I don't know what to do with it. Who's heard that before? I have a self-directed IRA, and I don't know what to do with it. A lot of folks. So that's why I went to work in the virtual classroom, and I created this master course. And I will talk at the very end, if you're interested in taking advantage of this master course, how you can get a copy of it. All right, moving on. Traditional IRA, Roth IRA, and solo 401k. Let me talk through these accounts from a tax perspective. And before I do that, before I talk about the difference between a traditional and Roth, let me touch for a moment on a solo 401k. Who has a solo 401k already? Okay, no, Ed does. All right, outstanding. I want to be very clear in that not every investor qualifies for a solo 401k. And the reason why I want to bring this up is because there are companies out there and there are speakers and educators that have polluted the industry, quite frankly. I'm going to be very blunt and transparent. I'm going to be blunt and transparent because you know who takes the phone calls? You know who unwinds the mess, the hornet's nest? John Bowens does. Not the person that charged him $2,000 at a seminar to open up a solo 401k. They're not around for the phone calls. John Bowens is the one that picks up the phone. And unfortunately, it's too late and I can't help those individuals. So a solo 401k can be incredibly beneficial because one, you can contribute more as a contribution on an annual basis. In fact, if you're under the age of 50, you can contribute up to $19,500. When you're 50 and over, you can contribute up to $26,000. And then there's what's called an employer deferral. It's like a match. So you could potentially get upwards of over $50,000 into a solo 401k. Sounds very enticing. Unfortunately, I find 95% of investors never make a contribution to one of these plans. So you've got to have the right intentions going into opening a solo 401k. Number two, in order to have a solo 401k, you have to have eligible earned income. What is eligible earned income? Income that you're paying Medicare and Social Security tax on. If all you have is passive income, income from rents, interest income. You're doing flips, but you have tons of write-offs. You don't claim any active income. You will not qualify for a solo 401k, but the guy that will charge you $2,000 to set one up, he'll do it without eligible earned income. I have to report to a regulator, the South Dakota Division of Banking. They don't. I have a lot to risk. They don't. You go back to them and want to claim that they ill-advised you, they're not going to be around anymore. That's the reality of it. This happens every single day. I get phone calls every single day. Please forgive me for being overly passionate about it, but I want to make sure I do the right thing, and I'm teaching this topic in the right way, not the way in which will benefit me in making sales. You can come to Equity Trust and open up an IRA, a 401k, really any type of retirement plan you want. So we're unbiased from that perspective. You want to make sure you do your own due diligence. So solo 401ks, in recap, can be highly effective. You can put a lot of money in. There's what's called a Roth component. But you have to be eligible to open the plan. Now, some people say, well, John, I don't have any earned income, but I have money to put in there. I have an old 401k or I have an IRA, and I'm just going to open up the 401k and dump money in there, and I'll worry about the earned income later. Well, the IRS website says you can't do that. So I'm going to pay attention to the IRS website, not the person that has a 100-square-foot office and 5 employees. Okay? So most people, the self-directed IRA, traditional, or Roth, is what makes the most sense for them to get started with. If you are eligible for a solo 401k, we can talk with you one-on-one, work through that process, even work in concert with your CPA or tax advisor to help you through that and make sure you're making the right decision. All right, what's the difference between tax-deferred and tax-free? Well, let me paint the picture for you numerically. For those of you that are a little bit more analytical, there are 3 buckets of money, if you will, or 3 buckets of accounts that you can put money into. All right? You have your taxable bucket, you got your tax deferred bucket, and you got your tax free bucket. When we say tax free, think Roth IRA. So in our taxable bucket, which is over here, if we put $6,000 in every single year and we had a 12% return on investment and 30% tax rate during the growth years, and then 20% tax rate during the year we distribute all of our money. In a taxable environment, we have about $601,000 saved. Every year, as we make 12% on our money, we have to pay taxes. That's where the 30% comes into play. For some people, that might be less. For some people, that might be more. So this is how much we have in our taxable bucket. We then move over to our traditional IRA, tax deferred. What does tax deferred mean? What this means is when we put money into an account, we get a tax deduction. It grows tax deferred, and then when we take the money out after 59 and a half, that's when we have to pay taxes. You'll hear people use the analogy, you either pay taxes on the seed or you pay taxes on the crop. So with a traditional IRA, you didn't pay taxes on the seed, so when you start taking money out after the age of 59 and a half, that's when you have to start paying taxes. So let's say you grew a traditional IRA to $1 million. And in year one, at 59 and a half, you took a $100,000 distribution. That $100,000 would be added to your ordinary income, so it hits your 1040 as ordinary income, and then you pay taxes based on your effective tax rate. So let's say you're at a 20% tax rate. 20% of $100,000 is $20,000. So you take $100,000, you keep $80,000, and you got to give $20,000 to the IRS. That's tax-deferred investing. In our example here, with the traditional IRA, using these same numbers that we mentioned in the 601,000 example, we have $894,000 saved. So if we compare our taxable environment to our tax-deferred environment, we're saving nearly $300,000 in taxes. This is the spirit of the tax-deferred IRA. Why people put money into IRAs, going back to 1974 when the ERISA Act was passed. Then we move over to the Roth IRA. For those of you who aren't familiar, Roth IRA, you put money in after tax, so you get no tax deduction. You grow it tax-free, and then when you take the money out, you pay 0% tax. So that's what gets you into that Kevin and Cynthia environment when you own rentals, for example, and you have all this tax-free cash flow. In this example, we have $1.117 million saved. So if we compare the Roth to the traditional, we have over $200,000 in savings. Comparing the Roth IRA to the taxable environment, we have $516,000 in tax savings. So that's the difference between a traditional and Roth. Now, does that mean we have to only self-direct a Roth IRA? No. I can't tell you how many people have come to seminars and conferences over the years and they say, John, I want to self-direct a retirement plan, but I don't have a Roth IRA, so I don't think that this is going to work for me. If you have a 401k that's tax-deferred or a thrift savings plan that's tax-deferred, and it's invested in traditional financial securities like ETFs, mutual funds, and stocks, and you don't want it invested there anymore, and you know you could do better in real estate, then roll it over into a traditional IRA and start growing it as a tax-deferred IRA. That's still okay. In fact, a majority of our clients are actually self-directing with a traditional IRA. Now, most people are working hard to try to get to the Roth IRA environment, of course, But not everybody is there because a lot of people spend their working years contributing to 401ks and other employer plans, which are mostly all tax-deferred accounts. And then when they retire, they simply roll those over into traditional IRAs and start investing in real estate instead of investing in the traditional market. Now, if you want to invest in the traditional market still, as I said, you have the option to do that through equity trust. All right, so that's retirement accounts. There are 7 self-directed retirement plans. I'm not going to spend any more time talking about contributions, eligibility. I have an entire module on all the different account types, how you can be eligible, how much you can contribute, so on and so forth. I want to get into the investment portion of what we want to talk about. That being said, I will mention contribution limits to an IRA. Does anyone know how much you can contribute to an IRA on an annual basis? $6,000 when you're under the age of 50, $7,000 when you're 50 and over. Annual contributions are really important from a compounding interest perspective. You want to fund your IRAs through investing, and then you want to fund your IRAs through annual contributions. Don't underestimate that annual contribution. In fact, a Roth IRA, a lot of people don't know about this. When you make a contribution to a Roth IRA, let's say you're under 50 and you put $6,000 in, and you have an emergency situation that comes up, you're allowed to take out whatever you contributed to the Roth IRA tax and penalty free. You just can't take out the growth until you're 59 and a half and the account has seasoned for 5 years. There's a 5-year seasoning period and 59 and a half. Now, during that time, you can invest that money. You would want to invest that money, whether it's through wholesaling or JVs or rentals or whatever it is that you want to do. So important to consider the annual contributions consistently. All right, 3 methods to finance property purchases. You're going to want to write down these 3 methods. We're going to go through them, show some examples here. So method number 1 is your IRA buys a property 100% outright as a cash buyer. Who's done that before? I know there's some folks out there. Awesome. So IRA pays cash. IRA pays for fix up and repairs. IRA receives all profit from the rental or sale of the property. As simple as that. It's not you buying it. It's not your LLC. It's your IRA. The second financing option is where your IRA partners. Your IRA can partner with yourself, your LLC, your other IRAs. Your IRA can partner with a non-disqualified person, we call it. So let's say Jim and I decide we want to partner IRAs together. We're not related. We can do that. And I'm going to show you the difference between partnering with a family member or ourselves versus partnering with a financial friend, we'll call it. So the second option is partnering. The third is write down non-recourse loan. Non-recourse loan. So if you go to a traditional bank and you get a loan, you have to sign something. What do you have to sign when you get a traditional loan? A guarantee, a personal guarantee. Unfortunately, under 4975, it's actually 4975C1B, it's considered a prohibited transaction for you as an account holder, because you're a disqualified person, they call you. It is a prohibited transaction for you to sign a personal guarantee that your IRA is taking on, a loan that your IRA is taking on. So you can imagine there aren't a ton of lenders out there that will loan to IRAs because of that. That paper that they underwrite, in most cases, nobody's going to want to buy that, right? So that's going to be a lender that's a portfolio lender. Could be a hard money lender possibly if you're doing fix and flip deals. There are some banks out there, national banks, that will loan on rentals that are in IRAs on a non-recourse basis. I can refer you to a couple of those lenders that I know of. But by and large, as I said at the very beginning, most people do real estate deals without debt financing. They either buy outright in cash or they partner. Respectfully, we don't all have hundreds of thousands of dollars in our IRAs to go out and buy 10, 15, 20 rental properties. Are you guys with me on that? That's where I'm at, right? So that's where we get into some of these other creative financing strategies that don't involve non-recourse debt. Now, there's another reason why a lot of investors try to stay away from their IRAs borrowing money. Does anyone know what it is? UBIT tax. there's this little-known tax called unrelated business income tax, UBIT tax, 511 to 514 of the tax code. A lot of people don't know about it. We like to call UBIT IRA tax, okay? And what this does, what this means is when your IRA borrows money, your IRA has to pay a tax on a percentage of the profits, a percentage of the profits that are allocable to the debt finance percentage of the property. So, for example, if you bought a property for $100,000 and got a loan for $50,000, you're at 50% debt. So the IRS is going to say you have to pay tax on 50% of the net profit. Now, on a fix and flip deal, that's likely going to be pretty significant. On a buy and hold deal, that's the one case where you can actually depreciate the property and write off all your expenses to potentially get to a point where you don't have any tax exposure. So what does this mean in recap? Well, I have an entire training all on IRAs, borrowing money, and UBIT tax, because we can't condense that down into a 90-minute program like we have here today with you. If you want to do this, sometimes the deals pencil out. You just got to pencil it out, do the math, and determine if it makes sense for your IRA to borrow money. Sometimes it does. But like I said, I can also show you a plethora of transactions that don't require your IRA to take on leverage, whether it's a private lender or a non-recourse lender. Last but not least, I mentioned depreciation. When we talk about IRAs owning rental properties, there is no depreciation because the IRA is tax exempt. I can't tell you how many times I've taught at seminars and conferences. I had one guy in the back of the room one time. He said, "John, you're crazy. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever to own rental properties in your self-directed IRA." And I'm kind of scratching my head because I said, okay, I have over 100,000 clients in Equity Trust. 80% of real estate transactions are buy and hold rentals. That equates to thousands upon thousands of rental properties that we have under custody. So you're telling me that every single one of those people, every one of those customers of mine is stupid. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're talking about. I find that hard to believe, right? There's a reason why people own rental properties in their IRA. When the IRA sells the properties, there's no long-term capital gains tax. There is no recaptured depreciation. It's all tax-exempt in the self-directed IRA. So I wanted to make sure I clarify that. On that note, let me show you an example of a rental property. This property was bought in Cleveland, Ohio. The investor's name is Gary. He has a self-directed Roth IRA. He bought this house at a foreclosure auction for $68,000. Yes, you will learn through the technology systems. We have the capability of allowing investors to buy properties at a share of sale auction or foreclosure auction. This house was bought for $68,000. He put $20,000 worth of work into it. So for those of you that are brand new, when an IRA buys a property, the IRA has to pay for all fix-up and repairs. Gary couldn't dip into his own personal bank account to pay for those repairs. It has to come from the IRA. So he's in it for $88,000. After the improvements are made, he puts a tenant in both units. There's an upper and lower unit. Unit A is paying $950. Unit B is paying $900 for a gross rent of $1,850. The monthly net operating income is $1,400. So there's no debt servicing because there's no loan. So we go straight to our net operating income of $1,400. So every month, tax-free, he's got $1,400 coming in. He's getting close to $59,500, so he doesn't have to pay any taxes when he starts withdrawing money. The, call it appraised value, after repair value, is $140,000. So if he sells this property, he's got between $30,000 to $35,000 in long-term gains, if you will. Because it's all in his Roth IRA, like we just talked about, there's no recapture depreciation, there's no long-term capital gains tax. All right, Gary was not always in a position to buy properties 100% outright. So this transaction is a partnership between his IRA and his LLC. Now I want you to pay very special close attention to this, because when you partner with yourself, you have to be careful. Because if you don't do it the right way, you can trigger what's called a prohibited transaction. Self-dealing, you'll probably hear this referred to as if you do any research online. There are disqualified persons to IRAs. Who are disqualified persons to your IRAs? Let me tell you, write this down. Anyone up and down the family tree, parents, grandparents, children, grandchildren, you are a disqualified person to your IRA. Any LLC, trust, partnership, or entity that's owned 50% or greater by disqualified persons is a disqualified person. What does that mean in real human being terms? That was a bad joke, by the way. No one caught that one. What that means is your businesses, your LLCs, your trusts, those are disqualified persons. Okay, up and down the family tree, you, your spouse, your businesses are disqualified persons. And you can't transact between a disqualified person and the plan, which means your properties you own now, you can't get them into your IRA. You can't loan money to yourself. You can't loan money to your business. Your spouse's IRA can't loan money to your business. You can't loan money to a son or daughter. Those are prohibited transactions. Equally, if you're going to partner your IRA with your non-IRA money or another disqualified person, you're going to learn you have to make sure you do everything proportionally. Proportionally. Just remember that term. All right, let me showcase this for you. So Gary bought this house for $41,500. He knew he needed about $30,000 in repairs, so he needed $72,000. He didn't have $72,000 in the Roth IRA, but he had enough in his Roth IRA and his LLC checking account to finance the purchase and rehab of the house. So from the very beginning of the transaction, he structured the deal 75-25. So let me show you what the titling looks like. Right down here at the bottom, Equity Trust Company Custodian FBO, Gary's IRA, undivided interest 75%, and his LLC, undivided interest 25%. So this is a tenants in common arrangement. He has his IRA on as a 75% owner, and then his LLC is a 25% owner. This is what's on the purchase contract. This is what ends up showing up on the deed. That's important. So $41,500 at closing, $31,125 comes from the Roth. So you'll learn Equity Trust has a digital processing system. He logs in online, keys in the information. Equity Trust zips the funds out the door to the title company. LLC puts in $10,375. They're in it for $71,500. Sells it for $116,000, has $10,000 in closing costs. Now let's look at the profit side. We have the Roth has to receive what percentage of the profits? 75%. So he's got $25,875 going back into the Roth, and then his non-Roth, his LLC, receives $8,600. So this is a fix and flip deal, joint venture, partnering with a disqualified person. Now I'm going to get to partnering with a non-disqualified person in just a few moments here. I have this slide up if you'd like to take pictures for titling purposes. This is how you title your contracts. This is what you put on a deed to a property. Equity Trust Company Custodian FBO, your name or account number IRA. If it's Roth IRA, Roth IRA. Why would you use your account number instead of your name? Anonymity, privacy. I have a lot of investors that come to me and say, John, I want to form a land trust to buy a property and have my IRA be the financier, if you will, of the transaction. Well, technically, you could do that. You could own a property in a land trust. The IRA is the beneficiary of the land trust. But why do that when you could simply title the transaction this way and use your account number instead of your name? What you're going to learn is 95% of real estate transactions that we process do not involve an LLC, do not involve a land trust. The IRA owns the property directly. Who owns properties directly in the name of their IRA here, by a show of hands? I do. Okay. Can you do it through an LLC or a trust? Yes, you can do that. If your attorney advises you to do that, take the recommendation of your attorney or one member of your financial team. I actually have a training, a module, all on the structuring of LLCs and trusts with IRAs. If you have an attorney that doesn't understand IRAs, that's okay. I built this training so you could actually send it to your attorney. They see on a whiteboard exactly how to structure it, and then they can pay for the transaction. But all the transactions that I'm showing you in this presentation are all directly purchased by the IRA account. If you're going to partner, you're going to add and plug and play each one respectively. All right, So how do you do this? There's a three-step process. I'm going to give you the three steps, and then we're going to show some more examples as we talk through the three steps. So step one is open and fund your self-directed account. Open and fund your self-directed account if you don't already have an account. If you have an account, but you have money elsewhere that you need to move over for an investment, you're going to want to make sure you get that done in advance. The second is direct your investment. We'll show you how to do that. We have an online digital platform to process the transactions. And then lastly, manage and monitor your investment. The opening and funding the account is really not the incredibly exciting part of it, to be honest with you. What do you think the exciting part is? It's directing your investment, getting the deal done, and then watching the money come back in a tax-free capacity. So let me pause for a moment. Public service announcement for everybody. Some of you may have heard me say this in some of the other training before. If you want to self-direct an IRA into real estate, you have to make sure your account is open and funded well in advance. And that is not just me working for a for-profit organization that's in the business of establishing self-directed IRAs. This is because I manage multiple call centers at Equity Trust, and I take phone calls every single day from very angry people who are upset that they can't fund their real estate transactions within 24 hours because their account was never set up and funded and moved over from Fidelity, Schwab, or wherever it was at. I'm at the mercy of the Fidelities and the Schwabs of the world to send the money. And do you think they're willing to send the money overnight? No. IRA to IRA transfers, 401k rollovers to IRAs, it's not like moving from one bank account to another. There are specific medallion signature guarantees, letters of acceptance, documentation, corporate resolutions. I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but the long story short is there's a lot of work that our organization takes on to get money from point A to point B, and it doesn't happen overnight. That's not our choice. That's the regulator's choice, okay? And I will tell you, I'm okay with it because it prevents fraud. It's good for you. You want that type of regulation in place, in scrutiny if you want. You don't want someone accessing your IRA without you knowing. That's why we have that in place. But the consequence here, if you will, is, which is a good one, is that it can take 5 to 7 days to get money moved over. So you want to make sure your account is set up and funded well in advance. Now, we're making this easy for you this weekend, okay? If you have your bags here, everyone should have one of these, right? If you don't have one of these bags, raise your hand. Do you not have one? Okay. Here, you can have mine. In the bag, you'll see there's an account application, okay? You can take this one here. If anyone doesn't have one, just raise your hand and May will get you one, okay? In the bag, there is a one-page application. That one-page application is what will open your self-directed IRA. And I would encourage you, if you don't have a self-directed IRA, or if you have a traditional and you're looking to open a Roth, we can help you with that this weekend. You'll fill out the application, just page one, and Mae Zippel here, she is a senior account executive. She's been working with the company for nearly a decade. She's been my right-hand person for the last 10 years. All right? You can sit down with her at any point this weekend, and she'll help get you set up. And I'll talk in a few moments a little bit about that process in a little bit more detail and what it means to be an Equity Trust client and what you get out of that. All right? But I wanted to make sure everybody has that application in front of them, and that's ultimately what helps you get set up and funded. Okay. Yes. I will share with you before we depart, what are the fees, how does Equity Trust charge you, so on and so forth. So you understand that? We're fully transparent in that regard. Now, I want to introduce you briefly to our My Equity Digital Portal. Who uses our My Equity Digital Portal? Awesome. If you're a client and you have it, you want to make sure you get in there. So this is our digital processing center. When you want to close on a real estate transaction, you're simply logging in online, filling out all the relevant information, digitally signing what we call a direction of investment form, and then a wire transfer is sent from Equity Trust out to the investment. And so dawned are the days of having to fax or scan an email, paperwork. All the record keeping, all the transactions occur within the Equity Trust system. That's really important. Again, it takes the burden off of you. That's the second reason why I love self-directed IRAs. It's more self-sufficient. When you want to pay for bills, we have an online check writing system that allows you to write checks and send them to wherever they need to go. And in December, beginning of December, so about a month away, we are launching our prepaid debit card system, which will put a debit card in your hands so that when you have expenses that come up at Menards, Home Depot, so on and so forth, you have the ability to pay for those very, very quickly. You'll also be able to link this up to a Venmo account. Who uses Venmo to pay contractors? I know I do. Awesome. You'll be able to link that up to your Venmo account and pay your contractors if they prefer payment through those means. So we have some pretty interesting technology that we're going to be rolling out. As you have renters that are sending money back in, we have a tenant payment center where you send them a link. The email is already pre-populated with all the information and details. They go in, pay their rent by direct deposit. That's direct deposited into your Equity Trust IRA. A lot of people aren't familiar with that tool. So there's a lot of tools and features of this MyEquity platform that you're going to want to learn about. Now, that being said, back to that prepaid card, which is pretty exciting. That doesn't mean that you can go to Menards and pick up a Fluidmaster and Flapper and on your way out the door buy a gallon of milk and a rack of ribs. I couldn't believe that, but you could buy racks of ribs at Menards. It's not a commercial for Menards. I just couldn't believe that. All right, so let me go through a few more examples to continue the wheels turning. And this one has an interesting element to it that you're going to see. So Alan from Texas. Alan's a buy and hold investor. He had a 403B. He was a college professor. He rolled his money over to a traditional IRA. He bought this property for $71,000 with his traditional IRA. And he was over the age of 59 and a half, by the way. $20,000 in repairs. So he's in it for $91,000. Renting it for $1,350 a month, going back into his traditional IRA, tax deferred. His annual cash flow is $11,200. His return on investment, his cash on cash ROI is 12%. The appraised value of the house is $123,000. He sells the house, no long-term capital gains, no recaptured appreciation like we've been talking about. But here's what's important about this example. The next deal he does, deal number two, he says, you know what, I don't want to have to pay taxes ever again on this money. And not so much for him, but his goal, going back to Kevin and Cynthia's example, is legacy planning, estate planning. He wants to leave his IRAs to his children or grandchildren, and he doesn't want them to have to pay taxes. So here's what he did. He did a Roth conversion. He converted money from his traditional IRA to his Roth IRA, but he didn't convert the entire amount. He converted just a fraction of it. So in year one, he converted about $75,000. And after the conversion of $75,000, which he had to pay taxes on, of course, that's known as a taxable conversion. So you convert $75,000, that $75,000 is added to your ordinary income, and then you have to pay taxes. So Alan pays his taxes, he buys his property for $54,000, puts $10,000 worth of work into it, he's in it for $64,000, renting it out for $1,500 for a cash-on-cash return of 15-16%. So on this particular transaction, $12,000 in tax-free cash flow coming in every single year. So he went from tax-deferred to tax-free Roth. So now fast forward, he did this 2 years, 3 years actually in a row. So year one, he did $75,000. Year two, he did a little bit more. Year three, he did a little bit more. And in each year, he bought another property. That's what we like to call converting in stages. See, most people, if they have $500,000, $600,000 in a traditional IRA, could you imagine converting, let's say, $500,000 from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA? That would put you at the highest tax bracket, right? That would make a significant change in your tax situation. So most people don't do that. They convert in stages. And that's why I wanted to show you this case study, because it's a good example for those of you that are saying, hey, I want to be like Kevin and Cynthia. I want more money into a Roth, but I can't justify putting it all in year one. Look at converting in stages. And just like he did, over the course of 3 years, he bought a property in each year, and in each year he converted a little bit more money over. So he's got 44.8 annual cash flow, 33.6 of that is tax-free in his Roth IRA. If he sells those properties in his Roth, like we've been talking about, no capital gains tax, no recapture depreciation. All right, another partnership example on a rental. This is a rental that I own. It's in Maple Heights, Ohio. I bought this house in March of 2020. And at the time of purchasing this house, I didn't have enough money in my Roth IRA with other properties and notes. I don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the IRA. And also, I can't dip into your money, unfortunately, and use it for my own benefit. All right? There's lots of restrictions. We have lots of controls. We have regulation. All right? And I say that kind of jokingly, but, you know, quite frankly and honestly, there are organizations out there like Equity Trust, okay, custodians, administrators, that have done things like that, okay, fraudulent things. So you have to be careful. You got to make sure you're working with the right financial institution. So that aside, bought this house. It's a double. Bought it for $63,000. It needed $2,000 worth of work. My Roth IRA funded 55% of the purchase. My traditional IRA funded 35%. And then my LLC funded 10%. So a 55, 35, 10% split. Now, yes, I'm a disqualified person to my IRAs, as my LLC is a disqualified person to the two IRAs. So we had to make sure that all of our profits and all of our expenses flowed 55, 35, and 10. And that's what we do. We make sure all the rents flow 55, 35, and 10. All of our expenses flow 55, 35, and 10. Everything's split up proportionally. All right, so that's an example of a three-way partnership. I think you can get creative here. You can do as many IRAs if you want to. And private lending. Not that I'm getting into private lending in this session, but you could actually loan money through partnering. I've made loans where I've used both my traditional and Roth. I made a $55,000 loan to a rehabber that was paid back in about 5 months at 8%. I had $27,500 come out from my traditional, $27,500 come out from my Roth. So on the promissory note mortgage, I had both my Roth and traditional. And then all the profits just went back in proportionally. All right, you guys getting the partnership between yourself and your LLCs, right? We got to make sure everything is done proportionally. Now, here's the game changer. Everybody asked me, John, how do I take a small amount of money in an IRA and grow it in a very meaningful way? Who's interested in that? All right. And by the way, this doesn't just go for an IRA. What if you got a small covered education savings account for a child or grandchild? What if you have a small Roth IRA to start? What if you have a small HSA to start? So Scott and Kate are investors from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Scott, he came to me. He had $24,000 in a Roth IRA. Active investor, has deals, knows investors, but can't figure out how to put this $24,000 in his Roth IRA to work. So he finds a deal, which is here. It's a fix and flip opportunity. Really, it didn't need much repair whatsoever. It was more of call it a wholesale opportunity. He needed $224,000 for the full purchase, carrying costs, minor repairs. Didn't have the $224,000. Got with a partner that he met at his local real estate investor association. Her name is Kate. And Kate had a Roth IRA and HSA with Equity Trust. And it was earning 0% interest because it was sitting in a cash account. So she wanted to put the money to work. Scott wanted to start growing his Roth IRA and had a deal. That was a good marriage there. You'll learn they are not related to one another. That's why this is going to work. They got with their real estate attorney. Their real estate attorney has been to our seminars and conferences. His name is Mike. Mike is familiar with UBIT tax and debt finance, real estate, and all of that. So when we got on the phone together and started carving out this transaction, they originally wanted Kate's HSA and Roth IRA to make a private loan to Scott's Roth IRA for this deal. Why do you think the attorney advised them not to do that? I talked about it before. You've been taxed, right? His Roth IRA in nearly a 100% leveraged deal is going to get crushed with UBIT tax. At a tax rate, by the way, of 37% for any income over $13,050 in 2021. So instead, the attorney advised them, they're going to structure it as a joint venture. They have a 5-page joint venture agreement. Per the joint venture agreement, Scott's Roth puts in $24,000. Kate's Roth and HSA puts in $200,000. Per the joint venture agreement, they split the profits 30-70. 30% of the profits go back to Kate's Roth and HSA. Even though she's got a majority of the capital in the deal, she's taking 30% of the profits. Scott's Roth is taking 70% of the profits. Why does Scott get a larger percentage in disproportionate to her capital contribution? Why do you think? She found, good, so I like that. Somebody said it over here, which is, he found the deal, right? He found the deal. And then you were talking about, I'm sorry, what's your name? Evan. So Evan says, hey, they're structuring it just like a private loan. Absolutely. It's a different form, if you will, but essentially, the term, if you will, is the same. The interest rate is really still the same, which actually ends up being about 9%. So we got $18,000 goes back to Kate's Roth and HSA. She makes a 9% return on investment, 18% annualized. Is she happy? Yeah, she's thrilled. She was making 0%. Now she's making 9% as a passive investor. And Scott's thrilled because he grows his Roth IRA from $24,000 to over $60,000. He made a $42,000 profit tax-free in his Roth IRA. He doesn't have to pay short-term capital gains tax. So if you can find a deal, find a money partner, find an attorney, that should be easy, and then you have equity trust. I have a course on this where you can plug this right into your attorney and say, hey, here's what it needs to look like. Now you go draft the documentation, and we can work together on that. Yes, ma'am. Right, so the... Okay, so the principal, all right, the principal was returned at proportion. Okay, I'm sorry. So her question is we're looking at the profit right now. What about the principal? That's your question, right? Okay. So the principal is going to be returned proportionally. So the $200,000 and the $24,000 return, and then the profit, the 70-30, at closing, the title company is going to split that profit 30-70, and then that's going to be returned to the respective accounts. 70% going back to Scott's Roth and 30% going back to Kate's HSA and Roth. In fact, the title company sent us one check, and we were able to split that check into all three accounts. You can actually do that. If there's multiple IRAs within the equity trust system, it's nice because we can get one wire or one check from the title company and then just split those profits proportionally. Ed? That's correct. Good question, Ed. This cannot be done with disqualified persons because we're doing a disproportionate profit split. That's why this works, because Kate and Scott are not disqualified persons. Second question? Correct. So she does take on risk. I'll take one more question. Yes. You could do it both ways. It depends on the state. Question was, do we do this as a tenants in common, or is it done as like an LLC or joint venture? So this particular transaction, the deed, they took title and the name of the joint venture, but in some states, like here in Ohio, my attorney recommends we do a tenants in common, and then separate we have a joint venture agreement. There could be a circumstance where an LLC is formed, but usually I don't see that happen because of the additional costs associated with it. But you can carve it up multiple ways. All right, I will mention on questions, because I know there are probably more, right after this session, we have it set up this way, we're having a lunch session in here, and it's all Q&A for the most part. So if you guys want to stick around after the session, we have about 15 minutes left. Stick around. I'll be taking tons of questions, okay? All right, moving on. Master leasing. All right, I want to make sure we talk about this. I know a lot of you probably, who came here to learn about the master leasing? All right, good. All right, so this is an interesting concept. Master leasing's been around for a really long time, by the way. It's not like our customers invented this. One customer in particular I'm going to talk about who really has blueprinted this for self-directed IRAs. This, although has been around for a long time, with self-directed IRAs, it's sort of an emerging strategy that people are using. And here's what this is how it was birthed. One, is it hard to find real estate deals out there by any chance? Is it hard to... Okay, that was another one of those terrible jokes that you laugh at me about. All right, it is. It's hard to find deals, right? And there are a lot of landlords out there that think that their houses, quite frankly, are worth a lot more than they actually are. Would you guys agree with that? Yeah. They still want the cash flow, but they don't want to deal with the tenants. Who's been there before? I'm a landlord, and I'm there every single day. I still deal with it, though, right? Why? Because the money's good. So there's an opportunity there. There's an opportunity to be able to rent houses from exhausted, aged landlords and then rent those out to an end tenant occupant. So let's walk through this high level. What we're talking about here, master leasing, is having an agreement with a landlord to rent a house and the ability to be able to then rent it out to another person, take the spread, and have a right to buy the property at a future date. So Candace, up north from Cleveland, has created a master lease agreement with her attorney that's specific to self-directed IRAs and has created the system for this. So let me share this example with you. This property you see here is in Twinsburg, Ohio. It's a two-bedroom, one-bath house. It's fully furnished by the IRA. Her IRA entered into a master lease agreement with an aging, exhausted landlord, somebody that doesn't want to deal with tenants anymore. They are renting the property for $1,000 a month. They made a $1,000 security deposit. The IRA is not taking title to the property. There's no closing. The IRA has a master lease agreement and an obligation to pay $1,000 every single month. So now the IRA is in this deal for $2,000. So as we go through this, just count up what we're putting out as far as capital contribution into the deal. So we're at $2,000. She's got the property. She's renting it. She furnishes the property for $5,000. How does she furnish the property? Her IRA pays for all the expenses. She uses our online bill pay system. In December, she'll be able to use our prepaid card. So she'll be able to go on Amazon, go to flea markets, Venmo, things of that nature. So now we're up to $5,000 plus $1,000 and $1,000, which is $7,000. The master lease agreement, this is an important one to take note of. The master lease agreement stipulates that any expense under $100, they take care of. The IRA takes care of. That keeps all of the, if you will, unnecessary burden off of the landlord. Any expense over $100, and they're pretty liberal about it. Something comes up, it's $175. All right, we're not going to bother the landlord with that. The key here in the negotiation is that they're not going to bother the landlord, and the landlord's going to get their check every month for $1,000 and be happy. And their house is fully furnished, and they're improving the value of the house as a whole. If the expense is over $100, let's say it's something like a hot water tank or a furnace or a major repair, that's when they're going to work with the landlord. But because they have a lot of contractors that they know of, they can take care of that for the landlord. The landlord just has to pay for it. You can draft and add provisions into the master lease agreement really any way that you want. An important part of the master lease agreement is the right of first refusal to buy the property. Why do we want a right of first refusal? Right, what if this house is fully furnished? What if they just sold the house from right under us? We can't have that. That's why we got to have the right of first refusal. By the way, let me pause for a moment and mention that you could also do this as a lease option to purchase. You'll hear a lot of people that buy properties as a lease option to purchase, and then they use this same strategy. All right, minimum 1 month rent, and there's a reason why we do a minimum 1 month rent, because it's an IRA deal. when your IRA starts running itself like a business, an ongoing trader business that's not substantially related to the primary purpose of the tax-exempt entity, if you're interested in the light reading in the IRS on the IRS website, then what happens is your IRA can be subject to UBIT tax. UBIT tax as it pertains to your IRA running a commercial business. We don't want our IRA to look like it's running a commercial business. So they do a minimum 1 month rent, but their tenants they're getting are staying for 3 to 6 months. These are not vacation rentals, folks. These are, call it midterm renters. They're people that are coming in from out of state that are having trouble buying a house. How many retail buyers do you think are having trouble buying a house right now? A lot. So people that come in from out of state, they move into Cleveland, and this could work in any market though. They don't have a place to stay. They want something that's fully furnished until they find a house, or maybe they're building their own house. I've seen a number of circumstances like that. Or maybe they are on a short-term job assignment. We see a lot of those types of tenants in this market. First responders, short-term job assignment. They're looking for a nice house. A lot of times it's just them and a spouse or just them. And so they're renting these small two-bedroom, one-bath, three-bedroom, one-bath houses. They're furnishing them. And they're doing this outside of their IRA, by the way. But then they said, hey, why don't we start doing this with our IRA? We only got a little bit of cash in there. Why don't we start doing it with our IRA? So if you only got a little bit of cash in your IRA, you can do this as well. The average rent is $2,600, so the spread is $1,600. So let's take a look at the year one financials. $1,000 deposit, $12,000 in rent, right? $1,000 a month. So they're in it now for $13,000. They got $5,000 in furnishings. $4,800 in miscellaneous expenses. So you got utilities, cable, internet, right? All that's taken care of for the tenant. So $4,800 in expenses, $22,800 is their first year investment. Could you get $22,800 into an IRA? It might be a little bit tough if you don't have any retirement plan, but think about if you made a contribution now and a contribution at the turn of the year, and then you have a spouse. They make a contribution now in a contribution at the turn of the year, even if they don't have earned income. It's called a spousal IRA contribution. We can talk more about that. So there are ways that you can get involved in transactions like this relatively quickly. So they're in it for $22,800. They got $31,200 in gross rent. Their principal is paid back, right? Remember, they don't own the property. They got $8,400 in year one operating income that's tax-free profit. $8,400 in profit. Let's take a look at year two, which hasn't happened yet, but this is forecasted. $12,000 in rent, $4,800 in expenses. We don't have the $5,000 in furnishings, right? So we got $16,800 in year two expenses, $31,200 gross, $15,200 in operating income. So our operating income is higher in year two. This asset was already paid for, right? So this is all profit coming in. If we looked at year three and we said, okay, we had a balance starting in year one of $22,800. We have income of $8,400 in year one. And then what about our IRA contribution like we talked about? Important to make our IRA contributions every year. So we make our year one Roth contribution of $6,000. Then in year two, we got $15,200. We make our contribution. Year three, we do $15,200 on our profit. We got $6,000 in our year three contribution. In 3 years, she's growing this Roth IRA from $22,800 to nearly $80,000, and it's all tax-free. And that's just one master lease property. What if she did a second in year two? And then what if she did a third in year three? Now we likely are over $100,000 in tax-free profit in the Roth IRA. So if you have a small IRA, in recap, if you have a small IRA or HSA or Coverdell Education Savings account, you can do joint ventures. You can look at master leasing. Could you do a joint venture with a master lease? I suppose you could. I haven't seen it done yet, but I don't see why you couldn't do it. Maybe partner your IRA with a spouse's IRA. Maybe your IRA with a child's IRA. You got to do it proportionally like we talked about, but you could. What if you did a JV deal with a non-disqualified person? Could you do that and set it up as a master lease? I don't see why not. So you can get really, really creative with these transactions. All right. So how do you get started? as May had mentioned, you fill out your application. Now, I want to dive for the remainder of the time, which is just a few minutes, into what's called our My Equity Digital Processing Portal. So you can really understand the mechanics and logistics around managing your self-directed IRA. Some of you already have self-directed IRAs. Some of you don't. For those that do, I want to make sure that you're taking full advantage of what Equity Trust has to offer. So when you open your account, even without funding it, because you're not going to fund it right away. Remember, it takes how many days to fund an account? 5 to 7 business days it takes to fund an account. I should mention that there are some financial institutions that want to fight us, and it can take longer. But the average is 5 to 7 days, all right? So in the meantime, you're going to get access to this My Equity platform. And here's what the platform includes. Right? These are the kind of the high points for everybody. Real estate and note purchasing portal. So when you want to buy real estate, you want to make loans, you log into the account, you provide all the information, you submit, you digitally sign. Any documentation that needs to be uploaded, you upload it into the portal. And then from there, we're going to assign a single point of contact investment liaison, we call them. They're going to be your coach and mentor through your entire transaction. And I'll talk about in a moment, for those of you who are clients, for those of you who aren't, both of you, you can take advantage of our Gold Level Service Program, which gives you access to a Gold Level Service coach and mentor that's going to take you through your transaction. A lot of people like that, especially on their first deal that they're doing. So the portal allows you to digitally process your transactions. You can do this from your smartphone device, your laptop, online bill pay system. Expenses come up on properties. Emergencies come up. You have the ability to write a check, send an ACH direct deposit, send a wire transfer. So whether it's an emergency or something you can wait on, you have the ability to pay for those expenses. Our payment center for our tenants, that also works for borrowers. So if you're a private lender, you can have your tenant or your private borrower, you can have them make payments via a direct deposit system. They click a link, they key in their bank information, the money gets zapped right into your Equity Trust IRA. That's all included. Prepaid card, I mentioned that, coming in December. Document upload capable. Deposit coupon generator, when you send money back in or a wire transfer, you, with two clicks of a button, you can download a deposit coupon and send that in for deposit. Video tutorials and training, a lot of people aren't aware of that. Mutual fund purchasing and ETC brokerage services. So if you are in a situation where you're not ready to sell off all of your stocks and mutual funds, and you want to move those over in kind, you have the capability of doing that. A lot of people aren't familiar with the ability to be able to move from one account to another without even ever having to sell any of your positions. You just slide them over to Equity Trust Company. And then if you have stocks and mutual funds that you want to buy, you have the ability to do that directly through Equity Trust. All right. All of your record keeping, all the administration, all can be handled within the online system, which takes the burden off of you having to manage all the spreadsheets and the tax documents and things of that nature. That's all done for you. So what does this cost you? Right? There's an annual maintenance fee and a $50 one-time setup fee. Annual maintenance fee and $50 one-time setup fee. Now this fee you see here on the left-hand side, let me give you an example. Scott made a $24,000 investment. That's how much money he had in his account. So he paid a maintenance fee, actually, of $290 in a $50 setup fee. That's all he paid. He had a $30 wire fee, I think, when he sent the money out the door. That was it. So for under, call it, $400, he made an investment that made $42,000. Do you think he's offering to buy me lunch next time I'm in Milwaukee? Absolutely. So we've created a system that's low cost. We're a trust company. We're not in the business to make millions of dollars through annual maintenance fees. This allows us to provide the healthy level of support, service, training, and education that's going to help you grow and be successful. As your portfolio value increases, our goal is to eventually charge you $2,150 a year, which means your account is over $2 million. Would you be okay with paying $2,000 a year if you have over $2 million? Probably would. Now, This fee is annual, January through December, but we're not going to charge you a full fee now and a full fee at the turn of the year. So what we do is we just charge you a portion now and then all of next year, and you get all your fees taken care of. That being said, what we're doing is a special promotion for anyone who opens an account this weekend. You'll have no fee for 2021. You'll just pay a fee for 2022. Okay, so you set up your account. You don't have to worry about a fee for 2021. We just charge you for 2022, and you're set up and going. All right, so for those of you that don't have a deal in mind yet, there's less barriers for you to get started. I also want to mention our Gold Level Service Program. In our Gold Level Service Program, who's a Gold Level Service member, by the way? I know there's a few. So as a Gold Level Service client, you're going to want to think about this. You're going to get access to our Gold Level Service team. These people are going to serve as your mentors and your coaches through all of your transactions. And so it's nice to get that extra hand-holding, as we like to say. You get priority processing in all of your transactions, which is essentially a cut to the front of the line pass. You're going to get two free $30 wire certificates, and then two free $75 expedited service certificates. The cost of the program is only $249. And that will cover your account and anyone within your household. So if it's you and a spouse, you only pay one $249 fee. And the fees for the account you'll earn, you can either deduct them from the account or you can pay by credit card. I'll have May, who's a client already that would like to upgrade their account to Gold Level Service, just raise your hand, okay? If you're not already a Gold Level Service member, just raise your hand and May will give you a form that you can complete, okay? Now, last but not least, I mentioned at the very beginning that we have a course called our Master Course. Now, the cost of this course is $1,875. But for those of you that are opening an account, because we're not in the business of course sales. We're in the business of self-directed IRAs. But our clients make money through education, right, and the training that we provide. So we have an incentive to produce a lot of training and education and give it away to our customers for free. So that's what we've done here. I mentioned before, one of the gifts that the pandemic gave to me is spending hundreds of hours in our virtual classroom creating content for you. And so we put together this master course. I call it the first ever IRA owner's manual. As a client of Equity Trust, you get access to this. This is part of the package. And so within this course, to give you an example, when you're ready to do your first real estate deal and you need to be taken through the process, we have an entire module all on the real estate closing process. In fact, we even plug you into an IRA-friendly title company called IRA Title Pro. So if you want to close your deal through a firm that understands self-directed IRAs, you have the ability to do that. Lastly, on this course, we go into, as I mentioned before, LLCs, trusts, and other entities. If you want to go deeper with self-directed IRAs into how do I form a trust or LLC or other type of entity of that nature, you have the ability to do that through these modules and even share this with your attorney, CPA, or other professional. So, in recap, when you open your account, you get the master course. When you open your account, you pay no fee for the remainder of this year. You just have your maintenance fee for 2022 and $50 setup fee. That being said, what I will close with is we're going to do a drawing. We are doing a Q&A session in here. So anybody that wants to stick around, they have more questions. I'm just going to stand up here and take as many questions as I can throughout the program. But with that being said, I hope you guys got a lot out of this session. I hope, okay, awesome. Good feedback. I appreciate that.